Okay, this week we have Parshas Bahar. So Parshas Bahar, of course, begins with a discussion about Shemitah. Vayidaber Shem Moshe Bahar Sinai Limar. And Rashi famously tells us, the next pasuk says about Shemitah. So Rashi says, Ma inyan Shemitah, itzal Har Sinai. You tell me about Har Sinai, then you say, you have to keep Shemitah. What do those two things have to do with each other? I mentioned that in the old days in Israel, when they would subtitle TV shows, and they would say, what is the price of tea in China? It would be subtitled as, Ma Inyan Shemitah Eitzel Har Sinai. What does one have to do with the other? So Rashi says, Ma Shemitah Nemru Klosea V'diktuk Deha B'Sinai. Just like Shemitah was said at Har Sinai, all of the mitzvos were said and their details at Har Sinai. And the question is, you could have plugged in any mitzvah for that. Any mitzvah could have been plugged in. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Bahar Sinai Lemar, keep kosher, keep it of the aim, keep Shabbos. And Rashi could have said, just like Shabbos, just like keep it of the aim, just like Kashrus, just like whatever, tzitzis was said at Har Sinai, all of the mitzvahs were said at Har Sinai. And it's possible that Shemitah is chosen because there was no mitzvah that seemed as irrelevant when the Jews left Mitzrayim as Shemitah. You mean to tell me, there's going to be a time that I'm going to own property in Israel. I'm going to own land. I'm a slave. I'm going to own land. I'm going to let it leave it for a year. I mean, that doesn't even make sense. I can't grasp such an idea that I would even own property. And therefore, the Torah is saying there is no mitzvah that even though Shemitah seems so distant to them, it was still one of the most meaningful mitzvahs that we have. All of the mitzvahs have that component to them. Now, of course, the question is, what is the goal of Shemitah? The goal of next year in Israel, 5782, Tavshin Pei Beis, is a Shemitah year. So what's the goal of Shemitah? The Torah tells us, Sheishonim Tizra Sadecha, 6 years your work, and the word that keeps coming up over and over and over again is Shabbat Shabbason. It's a Shabbat Ha'aretz. It's a Shna Shabbason Yel Aretz. The word Shabbos comes up numerous times. There's many, many linguistic parallels between Shemitah and between Shabbos, because they both serve the exact same purpose. In fact, Rav Kook says that what Shemitah does what Shabbos does for the individual, Shemitah does for the nation. You have to remember that we don't live in an agricultural society. We live in an industrial society. But in the days of an agricultural society, your farming was everything. So 1 year, you took that year and you didn't do anything. You didn't work it. You didn't harvest. You didn't sow, reap, any of that. You just took a year off. And what did you gain by that? Well, number one, you realized, the Sefer HaChinuch says, you're not in charge. You're not in charge. We might not have another mitzvah that exists where we learn this lesson so clearly. Because we live in an industrial society, we don't have a year off anymore. We don't say to our boss in the seventh year, listen, I'm not coming into my my IT job for the next year because it's Shemitah. It doesn't make any sense. But for what? And it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy. There are many, many years. In fact, one of the reasons we're in exile is because we didn't fulfill the mitzvah of Shemitah. But the idea is that Shemitah was the mitzvah, perhaps one of the only mitzvahs that we have that really taught us that God controls the world. I will do nothing for a year. I will sit back and I will, in fact, as the commentators explain, the farmers, they learned Torah, they went to Kollel, they made use of their time. They spend that time engaging in God. That's what we do on Shabbos. That's why the word Shna Shabbason, Shabbat Haaretz, because the goal is on Shabbos, what do? The rest of the week I'm busy and I'm working and I'm rushing in to catch a mincha and a late mariv, and I don't really have that much time to devote to God, and that's okay. Because we're doing other things. So Shabbos, it's my time off. And Shabbos actually means to stop doing X and then re-engage in Y. And that is my relationship with Hashem. That's why I daven longer. I have longer meals. I have all of these things that I do on Shabbos to reconnect myself with God. That's what Shemitah was. So the Sefer HaChinuch says lesson number one, the goal of Shemitah was that God controls the world. Number two, he says, Sefer HaChinuch says that you have to learn how to be a giver. We don't have another mitzvah like this, right? It's very interesting. We have mitzvahs that apply to my fields. If I'm a farmer, the main three mitzvahs are called leket, shicha, and peya. Peya is I leave a corner of my field. Leket is if I'm gathering and I drop one or I forgot one. Shicha, I have to leave it. Why can't it be that I take all of my stuff, I bring it home, and then I announce to the poor people, anybody that wants can please come and get what they need. Why not? Why don't we do that? Because you have to realize that it's not mine. So I have to deliberately leave a corner of my field over, and anybody can take it. On Shemitah, everyone is equal. It's the most amazing thing. The year of Shemitah, the rich, the poor, they're all the same. And they're going to come into my field, and they're going to take it. They're going to grab it, and there is nothing that I can do. I am giving and giving and giving, and I am getting nothing back. And that trains me how to be an ultimate giver. And ultimately, says the Sefer HaChinuch, it's about Emunah. It's about Emunah. It's about understanding that I'm going to take a year off, and I trust that God is going to provide for me. Where else do we have such a concept? So I shared this past Shabbos that Rav Lichtenstein, in a Shemitah, in an article about Shemitah 50 years ago, Rav Lichtenstein called Shemitah a halachic tragedy. And what he meant by that was the following. The goal of Shemitah was perhaps one of the most beautiful, majestic, magical connections with God. Very difficult, very challenging, but ultimately a direct relationship that I can see that God provides for me. And now, what's up, Shemitah? Either we hold of what's called the Heter Mechir, which we won't get into today. You can come Shabbos afternoon, we're going to talk about it. But you can hold of the Heter Mechir, they take the land, they sell it to the Arabs, and then I can work the land because it's not Jewish land. So then you don't even recognize that it's Shemitah. Or you can pay really expensive prices for the Shemitah, you know, Kedushah, Shviyah's food. And we're missing, he says, it's a shell of itself, the mitzvah that it used to be. Shemitah was and is a beautiful, beautiful mitzvah. And Rav Kook says about Shemitah, that what Shemitah does is that it provides for us a breathing space. A breathing space for us in our daily lives. What he means by that is we're so busy, which we are. And he wrote this 100 years ago. We're so busy. We barely have any time. So Shemitah allows us to just slow down, appreciate things, learn Torah, re-engage, connect with Hashem. That's what Shabbos is. Shabbos is not just a day to sleep. Shabbos is a day. The rest of the week, I'm busy. I stop. That's why there are non-Jews, there are secular, people that love the idea of one day off of the week, no technology, right? To re-engage in the things that matter the most. And that's what Shemitah was for the nation, a year where I could re-engage in my relationship with Hashem, where I could slow down, providing me some meaning of life, that we shouldn't be so tied to the land, that the land should work with us to get closer to God. You know, there's an amazing experiment, Joshua Bell is a world-class violinist. And he did as a social experiment. He went into the Washington, D.C. subway. You can watch it on YouTube. He went into the Washington subway, one of the busiest subways. This is a number of years ago already. Busiest subways. And what he did was he just played the violin for about 2 to 3 hours. And a few people gave him some money. But you can see it goes through a time lapse of like hundreds of people just rushing past him, one of the greatest violinists in the world. And finally, at the end, the woman says, I saw you playing last night. And the point of this social experiment was we sometimes are so busy, we don't slow down. Shemitah's goal was to slow down. Shabbos' goal, slow down. That's the goal of Shemitah. And that's what Rav Kook says. And it's very interesting. You know, we find that one of the mitzvos that the Rabbeinu Bachir writes in his Chovos HaLevavos, he says the following. Now, we know that failing to keep the laws of Shemitah, the Chazal tell us, is on par with murder, idolatry, and immorality. The big three, Ritzicha, Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, not keeping Shemitah is on par with those. How does that make any sense? The Rabbeinu Bachir writes in the Chovos HaLevavos, he says that that Hashem's grace and his brachos permeate every single inch of our earth, right? Everywhere we go, either we're able to go, we're able to walk, we're able to see, where every inch we walk is a blessing of God. And of course, most of the time, we don't walk through life so awed and overwhelmed by the presence of that goodness. We can't. It would be impossible. Every step, every breath, every touch, every smell, we'd be thanking God. It would be impossible. But he says, more often than not, we're conscious of it, but we're not grateful. So he says, why? He says, number one is we just have a lot of it. It's in abundance, right? If we got a gift every day of our lives, we'd stop viewing it as a gift. So we become accustomed to the blessings that we have. That's normal, although we shouldn't become accustomed, but we yawn at the capacity to get up, to use the, you know, to use the bathroom. We get to, you know, COVID has awakened our senses to more being appreciative of the gift of health, right? We yawn at the capacity to live in a community, to jump on an airplane and go somewhere, right? So we just have so much in this world, we take it for granted. So says the Chovos HaLevavos, the first reason we don't see blessings around us, we've become accustomed to them. The second, he says, which is fascinating, he writes this over 1,000 years ago, is that there's pain in our lives. The pain becomes distracting, right? Imagine that your next performance review at work, your boss tells you, you know, after evaluating your peer-to-peer review, most of your colleagues liked working with you, but one colleague didn't like working with you. If somebody ever says that to you, it took me a long time as a rabbi to get over this, because there's always somebody that doesn't like what you do. It's just part of the job. But if someone says to you, hey, listen, you know, the Marmers are really good people, and most of their friends like them, but there's really one person that dislikes them. You will only focus on that one person doesn't like you. Sometimes, says the Chovos HaLevavos, we are so cognizant of what we don't have, we don't nearly think enough of what we do have. So that's number two. And the third reason he says we don't see brachos in our lives, says, is because no matter what we have, someone always has more. Part of human nature, he writes this 1,000 years ago, no matter how healthy and wealthy a person might be, somebody always has it better. No matter how great your house is, your car is, your kids are, someone's got it better. So instead of being overwhelmed with gratitude and the blessings in our lives, we feel lacking and we feel something missing. So says the Chovos HaLevavos, we live in a world that is soaked with blessing, but we can't see them and feel it because the extraordinary is nothing but ordinary. We see the negative more than the positive, and somebody always has more, and says that's Shemitah. He says there's something about the fact that not observing Shemitah is punishable by exile, because Shemitah is about when we don't work the land for a year, something happens to our relationship with that land. When all of a sudden we become grateful for what we have, when we can't touch that land for a year, all we can do is look at it in awe and in amazement. Shemitah is the reminder never to take that land for granted, never to take for granted what it provides for us. That ingratitude, why is it that for so many years we didn't do Shemitah? We skipped cycles of Shemitah. So God says, I'm sending you into exile. Why? For this reason. We didn't keep Shabbos at times. We didn't keep kosher at times. Look through Navi. Terrible things are happening. But the reason we went into exile for Shemitah is because Shemitah is about being a level of ingratitude, of not saying thank you, of not recognizing what I have. And that's perhaps one of the issues we have with Shemitah. There's an amazing story of Rabbi Abram J. Twersky, one of the great leaders who passed away this past year. So he says that one day he was standing on his front lawn watering his grass, and was having a bad day. Car drives by. It's two men that were that were his patients. And were there for alcohol abuse that they had gone through his system. They jumped down and said, hey, doc, how you doing? And he says, you know, under normal circumstances, I would answer you, I'm fine, but I made it a principle that I don't lie to people in the recovery program. So I'm going to be honest, I'm having a lousy day. This is what he tells them. I'm having a lousy day. All right. So he says, doc, we have an AA meeting tonight. You should come. No, thank you. That night, 8 o'clock at night, there's a knock on the door. These two guys are there. Come on, doc, we're taking you to the meeting. So he goes with them. He says, and in my mazel, Dr. Twersky says, this meeting was a gratitude meeting. In all the AA meetings, there's a gratitude meeting. You get up and you say, I've been sober for X amount of years, whatever, my life is better and everything has been great. And one after another got up and gave his spiel, everything is much better and my life is great. He goes, I don't want to hear this. I was having a lousy day. The last guy gets up and the last guy says, he goes, I wish I could get up here and I can tell you it's been good. But my company downsized and I lost my job and I can't find another one. I fell behind on my mortgage, so they foreclosed on my house. My wife divorced me, took my kids, and last week the finance company repossessed my car. But I can't believe that God brought me all this way only to walk out on me now. And that's why, he says, Dr. Tversky, I was at that meeting. And he says that when we say in Shemona Esrei, Anisecha Shebecho Yomi Manu, we thank God in every day in the middle of it, three times a day, for the miracles, Anisecha Shebecho Yomi Manu, miracles we do every single day. What miracles? We don't have mun. Hey, there are not oceans and lakes and rivers being split open. There are no Anane Akavod, he says. What miracles? He says, that's why, he says, we don't appreciate the miracles. We get up and we say brachos. When we say them, when we say, Anosein l'sechivina bokeach ivrim, maldish arumim, do we actually say thank you for those things? And if God has brought us here, he's not going to walk out on us. And that's really the goal of Shemitah. And even if we can't perform the mitzvah of Shemitah like we might have in the past, Shemitah is a reminder of the good that we have. And when we say davening every morning to say brachos, to say, you know, those brachos, thank God of the things that I could do this morning. Elokai neshama shenasata me, God gave it to me. Thank you. Gave me the ability to walk and the ability to talk. And there are things that we should feel grateful for. And that's really one of the messages of Shemitah. Okay, so there, with the Shemitah year coming, it's important to spend a little bit of time. So again, we have the Sefer HaChinuch's three lessons. That number one, it's about God in control. I took a year off from my field. Being a giver, my field is yours. I can't do anything about it. I'm not getting paid back in return. And it's about emunah, perhaps one of the mitzvos that require us really to have. That's a mitzvah of emunah. The idea of Rav Kook, that this connection to Shabbos is about stopping what I've been doing and running around and busy. And imagine today what Rav Kook would say. Imagine how busy we are today. Even if we're not busy, we're busy. It's one of the most fascinating things that we have in our lives, that we have all of these things that should make us have more time. We have less time. And now we have a chance to have a day off with the Shabbos. That's what Shemitah was. That's what Shemitah is. And this idea of the Chovos HaLevavos, that Shemitah is really about an appreciation of what we have. The parasha continues. We're running out of time already. The parasha continues with the discussion about Shemitah, some of the laws of Shemitah, and about giving to the poor. But there's a very interesting language that Torah uses. The pasuk says in Perek Chafei, pasuk Lamed Ei, you know, after it talks about, you know, the returning of cities and Yovel, which is the idea of Yovel is that no matter how good you liked it, everything has to return to its, you know, to its source. Everything has to go. Everything gets a restart. That's why when they announced the Yovel year, Motzi Yom Kippur. Why do we blow the show for Motzi Yom Kippur? There's a lot of good reasons. One reason is that's when they announce the Yovel year, specifically Motzi Yom Kippur, when everybody feels that sense of reconnection. But the Torah tells us in Perek Pasuk Lamed Ei, V'chi Yamuch Achicha, if your brother is very poor, Umata Yado Imach, and his hand, you know, he's in your proximity, V'chzak Tavo Geres Osho V'cha Imach, you should help him. You should help him. So the Torah says when your brother is downtrodden and his hand is weak, you have to help him. So who's the Torah talking about here? The Torah is talking about, you know, the needy. There's a lot of psukim to tell us about helping the needy. So Rashi, being very sensitive to this text, notes that our verse is not discussing an ordinary poor person, but rather his hand is, uimato yado imach. It's beginning. It's almost there. Or who's this pasuk? The pasuk is someone who's begun to show signs of decline. He needs a little help to get back, right? The donkey whose load is about to fall off, so help him. So according to Rashi, the novelty of this pasuk is not that we should just help the needy, but rather, because there we have a lot of other verses to tell us that, but rather we should be sensitive that there are people, I should help them before it gets that bad, before they encounter that real, you know, life of destitution, right? That's Rashi. The problem is that the Medrash gives a different version of umach. There are seven terms in the Torah to connote poverty. Mach is the poorest of the poor, the lowest of the low, so low that, like, you know, he can't be, he's stepped on. So which one is it? According to Rashi, it's the guy who's almost poor. According to the Medrash, it's the guy who's beyond poor. Can't be that it's both. And I believe the answer is that you have here two extremes, but in truth, they have a common denominator, which is why it's connected with this parsha of Shemitah and of learning the art of chesed and of giving. In both cases, there's a moment of weakness. The person who can help is right there. In Rashi's example, the donkey's load is crashing. You're there. If you help it, you're good. They put it back on. The guy can go on his way. But if you don't help him, the donkey falls, the load falls, the apples fall out, the oranges go that way, and now it's going to be a longer time. Now he's really destitute. And the mach, the guy who's really, really poor, the doormat of society, is somebody who most likely is overlooked. He's forgotten already. And the only one who can help him is you because you realize that he's that poor. There's a split second where we can realize it. That's why they have this extreme range. It's not about giving tzedakah. It's about responsibility. And the only person that can be responsible is you, is the person who is there. And not always to think someone else will do it. Someone else will help this person. Oh, someone else will write a bigger check. Someone else will do the shopping. Somebody else will care for this individual. If we are entrusted by the Torah, we are the person wherever that situation is. And the moment that I think someone else is going to do it, I've missed my opportunity to do good. Chesed is not about how do I just give. It's about having an eye for it. Meaning even doing chesed, that helps that somebody doesn't become poor. Giving the money or helping them out or doing things in a way that might be a little bit unique and secretive and anonymous so that they don't get to that level. Or stepping into saying, I know that this person is so poor. I'm sure the Chesed Fund, I'm sure Chicago Center, I'm sure the Ark, I'm sure this person, that person is going to give to them. But if everybody else thinks that somebody else is giving to them, then no one else is giving to them. How often do we pick up the phone and say, no, I have to do it. There's a story told by the Lulav Rebbe that Slichos night, he wasn't there. He wasn't there for Slichos every morning. Where could he be? So someone said that they wanted to find out where he was. So they went and they realized that every morning, this Rebbe, Slichos, Rosh Hashanah, the holiest days of the year, this Rebbe was going to chop wood for an elderly woman who lived in the forest, but she needed firewood and nobody else was doing it. So the Rebbe says, I'll do it. What about Slichos, Hashiveinu Hashem Eilecha? All right, I'll do Slichos another time. But who's going to help this woman? That's what the pasuk means. It's our responsibility, especially in a beautiful community where there are so many organizations and so many people that can help others, that we should never think that it's not on us to be involved. And that really takes us to the end of Parshas Bahar. We're running out of time a little bit just on Bichukosai. Bichukosai, of course, is mostly focused on the tochacha. So if we do the right thing, it's going to be great. We're going to get rewarded, and if we listen, we'll get praise and reward. And in lo sishmu, and if we don't listen, so then we are going to get paid back and punished. And this terrible decrees that follow soon. And then you have the end of Bechukosai, this idea of a person kind of dedicate his value to the base of English. And the puzzle that comes up over and over and over again is this word of carry. But before we get to that, the pasuk says in Bechukosai Teilechu, the Balatanya, Rishonel Zalman of Lidai, wondered, why did we say Bechukosai? It should have says, in Bimitzvosai Teilechu. Why Bechukosai? It could have said, Dirachai, my ways, Mitzvosai, my commandments. Why Bechukosai Teilechu? And he offers a magnificent explanation, especially as we head into Shavuos. He says there are two ways for the Torah to be transmitted. Torah shebichsav is kesiva, written Torah, but also by ways of chakika, of engraving. And the Balatanya noted that the word bechukosai doesn't refer to chukim, like mitzvos that we don't understand, that are unintelligible to us, that are in a different realm that we just do, but rather it is a meaning of chakika, of engraving. And he says, when a person uses ink on parchment versus engraving the words in a stone, with ink, you have two entities that are never really fused into one. Right? When you put on clothing, he says, the clothing can rest on you, but it's not one entity. When you engrave something, the words are etched into the stone. It's one substance and not two. Says the Bala Tanya, there are two types of Jews. Those, he says, who go to work, who daven, who go to shul, who learn Torah, they have their lives, and sprinkled throughout their day is aspects of Judaism, and that's important. But it's compartmentalized. It's compartmentalized. Says the Bala Tanya, that's ksiva. It's ink and paper. Parts of your life that are parchment, parts are ink, and they're close, but it's not one. The goal of a Jew is to be a chakika Jew, that my religion is part and parcel of my essence, where mitzvos are not a part of my life, where I have work and I have extracurriculars and I have davening and mitzvos. It shapes who I am. It's my essence. It doesn't mean that I don't do any of those things. Chas v'shalom. It means that it's just part of who I am. I'm a ben or bat Torah. And that means everything that I do. If you do it like a chakika, if it's etched into you, part and parcel of who you are, not just a component, but the component, then teilechu, you will grow. But if it's ksiva, like pen on paper, then it won't. And that's a way that we approach life, ksiva or chakika. Right? It's throughout Tanakh, it's throughout rabbinic literature. You know, the pasuk David HaMelech, the Sfas Emes, quotes the pasuk in Tehillim that says, Chishavzi derachai, I considered my ways, v'ashiva raglai al edosecha, but I turned on my feet onto my, my edos, my testimonies. And the Medrash says that David HaMelech had a busy schedule. It's a fascinating Medrash. He says, He says, I got a lot of things to do. I got to go here. I got to go there. But to Kinesios, but to Midroshos, but Ashiva Raglai Ledosecha. So most interpret this Medrash to say that David says, I'm so busy, but Hashem, at the end of the day, all I want to do is learn Torah. Right? Like the great Gedolim, who shoulder questions from the world, but all they want to do is escape to the Olam HaTorah, to a Gemara, to give a shir. But a friend of mine once read the Medrash that this Medrash is an attitude. Wherever I am, I'm in the base Medrash. Wherever I am, in any situation, I am, my feet are in the base Medrash. It's not that I'm physically there, but it's chakika. It's part of who I am. It's an amazing, amazing idea of the Bala Tanya as to what it means. And that's why you have the Tochacha. So we'll use this and then we'll end with the following. When you read through the Tochacha, the word that comes up over and over again, the theme of the problem is the word carry. The word carry comes up over and over again. The Hashem says, "In telchu imi carry, if you do this, I will respond in kind. I will act with you, be carry." Almost, seven times throughout the Tochacha, you have this word carry. So the Orachaim HaKadosh explains that carry means happenstance. That sometimes we follow God or we view it in a happenstance world. Like there's no pattern. So God says, if you want to act that way to me, that you don't view the world with a pattern, then I'll do the same to you and you won't recognize this pattern. And there's other interpretations. Unkelis says it's a stubbornness. It's a harshness towards God. Rav Hirsch believes that it's more of an apathy. That it's my religion. It's not my priority. So God says, all right, if it's not your priority, then me to you is not my priority. I'll respond in kind. But Rashi says that it means like inconsistently, not necessarily apathy, inconsistency. What does it mean inconsistency? The most important aspect of any relationship is trust. Trust in our relationship with our spouses, with our children, with our family, and our business. If we can't trust someone, that relationship is severed. It needs work. If going through any kind of difficulty, whether with a spouse, a child, a friend, a neighbor, whatever it is, and there's trust issues, you need a professional to help you mend those ways because there is that trust was breached. How do I fix it? In our relationship with God, we need to earn God's trust. not trust in God, like a belief, a theological discussion. I mean that I'm obedient to God. It means I could have questions and I could have doubts. We just ran this a week ago with my eighth graders and their names, that number is the session on Emuna. We have questions and we have discussions. We have doubts and all of those things. But it's about relation with God. I told them the story that Elie Wiesel talks about the fact that they one time took Hashem to a Din Torah. They took God to a Din Torah and they yelled at God and they screamed at God and did all of these things. And Elie Wiesel says, and at the end, they said, all right, shine, the case is over. Let's daven Maariv. Right, okay, they were angry and they were upset, but they trusted God and they davened Hashem. Telchu imi keri means God turns to the Jews and says, if you are inconsistent in your commitment to me, if I find that I can't trust you to seek me, that you're constantly knocking at my door, then I will respond in kind. Of course. Hashem always leaves open the ability for us to come back to Hashem. That's not a question. But the idea of the Tocha is saying we need to be consistent with Hashem. We might not always get it. We might have questions and we are filled with them in recent days. But we understand that we trust in God. That when I asked my eighth graders, what does it mean to have emunah? Many of them said, emunah means that I trust in God. I don't understand it, but I trust in God and I'm committed to God. And when we go through these things, you probably saw some of these unbelievable clips of these people sitting Shiva in the most terrible of ways, and yet a level of emunah that we can't even begin to fathom. That's a trust in God that should be an inspiration to us. We don't always get it, but that's telchu imi keri. And the challenge is to be obedient to God, not in spite of our questions, but because we have questions. Not, you know, as we've talked about in the past, the story with the man, you know, in his cabin, and all of a sudden God appears and he says, listen, there's a large rock in front of your cabin. I want you to go push that rock with all of your might. So says the man, so I did. And every day, many years, from sunrise to sundown, shoulder squarely against that cold, massive surface of that unmoving rock. And I pushed and I pushed. And each night I returned to my cabin, sore, worn out, feeling that the day had been spent in vain. So the Satan comes one night and the Satan says, enough already. Enough. You're a failure. Why bother yourself? Why make yourself crazy with this? Just get up there, put a pinky on the rock, scroll through Instagram on the other hand, and then be done with it. So the man says, you know what? The Satan has a good point. It's a good point, the Satan. So Hashem, he says, I've labored long and hard for your service. And I pushed and I pushed and I pushed. And yet after all this time, I haven't budged 1 millimeter, half a millimeter. What's wrong? Why am I failing? And Hashem responds compassionately. He says, my friend, when I asked you to serve me and you accepted, I told you to push against the rock with all of your strength. Never once did I mention that I expected you to move it. I asked you just to push. And now you come to me with your strength spent, thinking you failed. Look at yourself. Your arms are stronger. Your hands from the, callus from the constant pressure, your legs through opposition that you've grown, and your abilities surpass much more than you used to have. True, you haven't moved the rock, but your calling was to be obedient, to push and exercise your faith and trust in my wisdom. Now says God that you've done that, I will move the rock. And that's this tochecha, especially important as we are on the heels of still such an unimaginable tragedy, to understand that there are things we can't ever have answers to. And our job is with the questions and with the doubts and with this, to keep pushing with, not in spite, but with the questions that we have. And as we do that, our emunah grows stronger. We know the story with Rabbi Akiva and the foxes. We know that Rabbi Akiva says that Tully, the Nevuah of Zechariah and the Nevuah of Shel-Uriah. Tully means that because I looked at the terrible destruction, I didn't avert my eyes. I looked, as the Rav says, directly into that tragedy. And I studied it and I pushed my way through it. Now I can get to the Nevuah of Uriah, to the hope and rebuilding phase. And it's that hope that this Tocha should bring us continuous chizik as we continue to grapple with this terrible situation, to keep pushing against the rock with all of our might, and eventually, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will move the rock. Wish you all a wonderful rest of your